Thank you very much. Let me first of all say how grateful I am personally to Bishop Hope for allowing us to have this meeting here. It must be noted that Pat did call me and say that he couldn't find any Church of Christ in town who would allow us to do this. You need to take note of that as well. Now, let me begin by saying that I hope that you park your car outside and not your brain. I'm serious about that. Now, let me first of all say that I'm a parable preacher. I will be telling stories that illustrate a point. I do that because the greatest preacher who ever lived was Jesus. And without a parable, the Bible says, "Spake he not unto the people." The word parable means to throw alongside. It means that you take what is familiar and throw it along beside that which is unfamiliar, so that which is unfamiliar can become familiar. You take what you have problems understanding and you place it alongside something that you understand, so that what you don't understand, you will understand. Now, y'all leave all that stuff up there. I used to do the same thing you just did, so don't move it. I'll take care of that in my next 15 minutes. Let me begin this way. The Bible, like the Constitution of the United States, is a living document, and it must be interpreted in relation to the facts at the time that it is being interpreted. While the Bible does not change, times change, facts change, and so it must be interpreted then in relation to the facts at the time that is being interpreted. What do I mean by that? R.N. Hogan used to say, if you're going to understand the Bible, son, you got to know who's talking, when they're talking, who they're talking to, and why they're talking when they're talking. Now that's important. That's important. The Bible doesn't just say anything. It doesn't just say anything. It says what it says at a time that it says it, and there's always a reason that it says it at that time. I want you to keep these little things in mind as you understand our process here. I said the Bible, like the Constitution of the United States, is a living document and must be interpreted in relation to the facts at the time that it is being interpreted. Thomas Jefferson, the architect of the Declaration of Independence, said, "We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." At the time, Thomas Jefferson himself was a slave owner. And in fact, the first 13 presidents of this republic owned slaves. So what Thomas Jefferson really meant was all white men are created equal, and all white men must be free, and all white men have the right to be happy. In 1857, a slave named Dred Scott, who ran away from his owner's plantation in the South, much like Onesimus in the Bible, and then he sued for his freedom in the North, in the courts. The Supreme Court looked at the Constitution of the United States in 1857 and said that no black man had any rights that any white man was bound to respect. Then in 1896, in the President versus Ferguson decision, where the Homer Plessy got on a train in Louisiana, sat in a seat in a coach that was reserved for whites, and when he refused to move black man, he was thrown off the train. He sued the state of Louisiana, and the Supreme Court looked at the same Constitution that looked at in 1857 and decided, well, separate but equal is the law of the land. Same Constitution. It did not change, but the facts have changed. And then the Supreme Court interpreted the Constitution in relation to the facts that were at that time. Then along came 1954, and a little girl named Linda Brown tried to go to school in Topeka, Kansas, a little black girl, 9 years old, and when she was denied admittance, well, her family sued the Topeka Board of Education. And the Supreme Court ruled that segregation in public education is unconstitutional, and then declared that it must end with all deliberate speed. Constitution hadn't changed, but the facts had changed, and so it was interpreted in relation to the facts at the time that it was being interpreted. Now, the sense of a parable is this. If you can see and understand that, you ought to be able to and understand this. I know, before you shake your head too much, just listen now. Just listen. Don't just get on the bus and stay there until we come to stop. Now, it's going to all make sense in a minute. Now, let's go back. I said that the issue of women and their role in the church must be interpreted in relation to the facts. The facts that are current. What do I mean by that? Listen. At the time that Paul said, let the women keep silent in the church, women were regarded as little more than property. They had no rights, absolutely none. No rights at all. A man owned his wife like he owned cattle. You know, that's the way it was then. You couldn't vote. In fact, you just got the franchise to vote in this country in 1920. Now, also slavery. Who in this audience tonight, would go to the scriptures that were used at one time to justify slavery? Who would go to those passages now? Slaves obey your masters. Who would use those scriptures now in 2006 to justify human slavery? Who in this audience would do it? Nobody. Still in the Bible. But we revisited those passages and now we interpret them in relation to the facts at the time that they were being interpreted. That specifically is the difference. That specifically is the difference. Well, let's take it a step further. White folks did go to the Bible and said, we are demanded, we are commanded by God to enslave blacks. At enslavement. They enslaved us, and then they went to the Bible to find justification for what they had already decided to do. Men decided to subjugate women, to subordinate women, to assign to women roles in the church and everywhere else in society that was inferior, and decided to discriminate against them, to deny them the rights that they would never deny to themselves. And then they said, well, we got to find justification. Let's go to the Bible. If you don't understand that simple thing, you're going to miss the meaning of everything that I say to you tonight. Now, how did they do this? Do this. Well, let's go back to the whole question of slavery. How did whites enslave blacks? How did they do it and how did they get away with it so long? People who have the right to define you have the right to confine you and the right to control you. If they can define you, then they can confine you, and if they can confine you, they can control you. So when whites first defined blacks as slaves, then they confined them to the plantations of the Carolinas and the cotton fields of Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi. And then they controlled them. How did they control them? First, they had to decide that they were superior to blacks and they had the right to do it. And then they had to convince blacks that they were inferior to whites and they were supposed to be enslaved. How did they do that? Simple. They took a whip in one hand and the Bible in the other hand. And they created in blacks fear. And they convinced them with the Bible that they were inferior to whites and that whites were their masters. And so they quoted over and over again, servants obey your masters. And everybody knew who the master was. And so blacks then accepted an inferior role based on scriptures that were used at that time to justify their enslavement. How did they do that? Very simple. The slave master was, if you can make blacks dependent on you for their food, their clothing, and their shelter, then you can control them. Men, if you can make sure that women are dependent on you for their food, their shelter, and their clothing, you can control them. You all heard that expression, you know, keep them barefoot. Y'all don't try to act like you haven't heard that. Barefoot and pregnant, and then you can keep them in the house, you can control them. And that lasted for a while until women became independent and their thinking, a judgment, and said, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this. There's something wrong with this. Now, let me conclude this portion of my... I forgot about that chart. Let me conclude this portion of my remarks with this. And this is a direct appeal to the women. You remember when Joshua sent spies, these 12 spies, to spy out the land, and 10 of them came back and said, it's beautiful. The fruit is luscious. Everything is beautiful. But there were giants over there, and we were as grasshoppers in our own sight. In our own sight in their presence. What does that mean? It means that they felt inferior to the giants. And since they felt inferior to the giants treated them as they were inferior, and they were afraid and they ran back. But two men, Joshua and Caleb, said, yeah, it's beautiful over there. And we can take the land. As soon as women in the Church of Christ wake up and understand, say, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this. We do not have to accept any inferior status imposed on men. And we're going to exercise our rights in the church just like we found our rights in the larger society. Things will change. You say, well, that's but I'll tell you what the but is. It's interesting that women have tried to teach me that they ain't supposed to teach me. Now you just think about this. They tell me, Brother Rose, you know that teach men. I said, so you're teaching me that you ain't supposed to, that I ain't supposed to teach you, or you're not supposed to teach me. How much sense is that? And then I'll be done for this section. He mentioned something about usurp and authority. Listen, you know why you all can't stand up in here and ask questions tonight? You know why? Because he doesn't think you, a woman can say anything in here. He said that it's all right for us to read what you write, but we can't hear what you say. How much sense does that make? How much sense does that make? How much you think God cares more about your writing what you read than he cares about me hearing what you say? Or vice versa? Why should he? I love y'all. I'll be back.